Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Brain Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Terence Corrigan. Now, apologies if I'm looking a bit weary. It is a sweltering hot day in Cape Town today and very still, but we have never let that stop us before, so let us get into the news. Terence, after the fire and the fury of last week's State of the Nation address, and in the build-up to the budget, there's a little bit of a lull in the news. So we're going to take a look at some of the kind of bigger stories playing out. This one may not seem like a big story, but I think it does have important implications. So this is from the Daily Maverick. Omar Shatile's blue light convoy is, according to residents in Midrand, an absolute menace on some of the roads there. According to residents along one of This is from the story. Residents along one of Midrand's busiest commuter routes say that Deputy President Omar Shatile's official convoy repeatedly drives against oncoming traffic during the morning rush, turning ordinary public roads into temporary VIP corridors. Residents who spoke to the Daily Maverick and asked not to be named said this occurs most mornings when the convoy allegedly blocks oncoming lanes along the Allendale Drive from Greek Street to Pretorius Road opposite Mall of Africa before proceeding at speed on the wrong side of the road. When asked for comment, a spokesperson for Ashatila, Kenneth Causa, told the Daily Maverick he could not speak on behalf of the Deputy President's motorcade drivers and that anyone witnessing transgressions and expressing concerns about traffic violations should report these to SAPS. SAPS did not respond with a comment when the media talked to them, which I don't know how many stories that's recently been the case in. But, you know, it does not speak well to the capacity of SAPS, as we know, is not in a great place. So, Terence, let's just put this in perspective, right? Most morning, it seems, and apparently, according to some of the reporting here, even when the deputy president is not in the car necessarily, you've got this blue light convoy driving like complete crazy people, blocking off the road, driving people off the road, driving on the wrong side of the road, just, you know, complete disregard for the law, acting like royalty. This is the same person whose bodyguards in a blue light convoy got into trouble because they beat up some people, some random people on the side of the road, allegedly because they were a threat to said convoy, although no evidence for that was ever produced. And this man is also very possibly the next president of South Africa. Now, there has been some polling done by us, by the Social Research Foundation / Common Sense, which has found that his approval rating, I think, is between usually around 10 and 15%. I think I'm correct in saying. What do you make of this, Terence? And what do you think it says about the larger direction that the ANC is headed in?
Well, I think that a little bit of perspective helps here, that I can remember close to 20 years ago, this became an issue. The conduct of blue light brigades or blue light bullies. There were cases where there were allegations of tires being shot out, literally, kind of die hard with a vengeance, type script writing. I know one I've met one person I used to work with who was literally pushed to the side of the road. When his car couldn't go any further, a guy armed with an assault rifle got out, shoved it in his face, and threatened to shoot him if he didn't get onto the pavement. This was like in the center of Joburg, where there's not much room to maneuver. But yeah, that I've occasionally had the displeasure of crossing paths. The idea, basically, the mentality is that all things must yield. You know, it's kind of like a police car on the way to a crime scene or an ambulance, transporting someone who's just had a heart attack, except with less politeness and grace. Yeah, and I think that what that came to signify at the time was this sort of appallingly arrogant big man style of politics that, because I'm so important, the world must know that I'm important. I remember Julius Malema was apparently driven around in a blue light convoy, and his only position at that point was head of the ANC Youth League. And I was told by someone who had insider workings of the or should I say detailed workings of the kind of security apparatus, that this was now becoming a bit of a fashion statement. You know, mayors of small towns wanted their blue light brigade, and there's something, as you say, dreadfully monarchical about this. Except in a monarchy, you know, the highway technically belongs to the king, so you know, king gonna do what king gonna do. This is someone acting as though. As though he or she is the king. And I think that the message that is received, whether this is what is intended, is that this is a political class that is so disconnected from everyday realities. You know, rather like a European royal family, you know, for whom the trains will wait, so they're never going to be late for a train because the train will wait. You know, at the same time spouting platitudes about equality and about how we're all in this together, right? You know, I would draw a connection between this and the beloved premier of our province, my province, not yours anymore. Although I must say, I right now I have power, which I understand you don't have. So,
yes, you know, no, this is a rare thing right now.
Premier Lusufi was saying, well, you know, sometimes I have to go to a hotel to bath, and all those memes showing him as Marie Antoinette, you know, let them book into a hotel. As I say, a kind of obscene sense of unearned entitlement, grotesque self-importance, all while just oblivious to the fact that people actually pick up on this.
And that's I think the thing that's really different now is that I think, you know, South Africans didn't like this, but by and large they kind of either put up with it or they didn't let it really affect their kind of view of politics in a larger sense. But it's been like an acid sort of eating away at things. And when you see those sort of approval ratings for Mashatile, just, you know, by comparison, like I think in the same poll from Common Sense SRF, you have like Helen Ziller with like twice the popularity that, or even more, like sort of 29% favorability, Steyn Hazen somewhere around 25%. Cyril Ramaphosa 40%. So if the ANC's next great hope is to go with someone who is starting off super unpopular, now if he becomes leader of the ANC, I'm sure there will be people who will back him, his numbers may rise, but the fundamental reality is that I think as a political force he really doesn't have anything outside the ANC, and the ANC is a shrinking pool these days. He doesn't suggest to me that he's the kind of leader who can rescue the ANC from its current situation. What do you make of that? I mean, is it just because, like, I mean, what's the story that's always told about ANC leaders, that they're biding their time, that they're working some great strategy?
Yeah, look, my understanding of it is that the two big contenders for the ANC's leadership are Mashatile, who I think is fundamentally hanging his hat on the idea that he can win constituencies within the ANC. I don't know, maybe hoping that, yeah,
presumably hook up together with MK and the EFF. That seems to have been some of the suggestions. Yeah. We don't know that for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, commandeer the party brand, hope that will carry you far enough, work out deals. But I've never got the impression that he is, or has it really even tried to be, a particularly popular figure, you know, on the outside. For all his faults, Zuma did that, and I think he did that fairly effectively, including with some non-historically ANC constituencies for a while. Mandela did that, even Thabo Mbeki in his own way. But I think that, over the last couple of years, just to enhance the monarchical thing, I mean, this sort of has been the pattern with President Ramaphosa, that he seems to have locked himself up in the warlock's tower, you know, leaving everyone to guess about the magic he is, you know, he is working on the inside. That, you know, look, I must confess, I've started rewatching Game of Thrones, and I particularly like those scenes that are set in those like magic cities in the southern continent. What's it, Essos? Yeah. Okay, so yeah, so you know, you can get that, or you can get this. You can get Mbalula, or what exactly are you getting there? And I think he puts forward this sort of flamboyant, almost buffoonish public image. I don't think that that's really him, but I do think that neither of them give the impression of being you know, people of particular stature. So yeah, you know, maybe the, you know, I remember back in the early 90s, there was an Irish folk band, the Dubliners. They wrote a song at the time that the just Soviet Union was falling apart, called, it was called The Death of the Bear. And there's a line there, the bear was long dead before it went mad. And I wonder if this isn't the ANC, you know, visibly failing by every metric. But there's this air of make believe that, you know, somehow the people are going to see the error of their ways.
Yes, we just need to ride over them with our blue light convoys a little bit more, and then they'll realize how great we are.
Maybe they'll realize how important I am.
Yes, no, it is a this blue light story is a striking testament to how out of touch much of the ruling party's political class has become. And I think if ever, you know, if indeed the ANC does undergo the sort of kind of collapse that we are increasingly seeing in polling and in by-elections and stuff, if it does come to pass, these stories will be taken as, well, why didn't anyone see this as obvious at the time? In retrospect, it's going to be very clear that it was this kind of attitude.
Right.
Okay,
Well,
so from the riding around in blue light convoys, let's stick with the theme of blue. Terence, in our pre-show discussion, you made the comment that water is the new electricity. Thankfully, we have been pretty safe from load shedding for the past, what is it, it's over a year now. We haven't had load shedding, or close to a year. I think we may have had it in March last year. But you know,
yeah.
time can get a bit tricky. Anyway, we are now seeing water crises all over the country. For a long time, these were mostly confined, I think, to the most dysfunctional and smallest rural towns, often in the Northern Cape. But in recent years, they've begun to spread out across the country. Of course, had the scary the d potential day zero in Cape Town, although that never came to pass. In Joburg and in parts of the southern Western Cape and the Eastern Cape, things are looking pretty rough, though. As we've talked on the show recently about the water outages in Gauteng, but the water situation in the southern Western Cape has been declared a national disaster. The Minister of Water and Sanitation, Penny Majordina, has described the worsening water crisis as dire, saying she's supporting us declaring a state of disaster in parts of the province. There are high-risk areas, Calitzdorp, Ladysmith, Van Wyksdorp, Saul, Witsand, George, De Rust, and Knysna, of course, is the big one, which is facing severe issues. There's many, which is already, Knysna is already in a state of disaster. There's a lot of promise that things are going to be, you know, actions are being taken, boreholes are being drilled, water tankers are being brought in. But Terence, this seems like, if particularly in Knysna, that it is just growing into an ever greater crisis. What's your take on this?
My take. Well, my take is that we should have seen this coming 30 years ago. Here's a few little background details. South Africa is a water-stressed country. Now, I think that to some extent that was concealed by one big psychological factor that you could generally drink the water out the taps. That's actually quite a rarity around the world. And I think that that makes you much more cognizant of just the place that water plays in your life. If you have to boil water or buy it, that says to you that this is a resource that you know that requires some work. If you can just pull it out the tap, it's just there for everyone. Plus, you know, there was a lot of there's a culture of swimming and watering gardens and kids running through sprinklers and all that, and all that's great. But we entered post 1994 with that issue being a problem. I'm old enough to remember the droughts of the early 1980s. Growing up, spent about 2 years in a town where you literally got your drinking water from a water tanker, and you couldn't route the water that came through your tap through your geyser because it was contaminated. You could bath in it, but just saying this has been there. Already in Johannesburg in the 1990s, there were concerns of what they call lost water. And I think I seem to remember the figure there was about 40% of water was being lost to leaks, wastage, just general inefficient use. I think the invoice for that has arrived. Certainly in Joburg, where I live, there are neighborhoods that where there are constant demonstrations, and we're not talking about places built of cardboard and zinc plating. These are nice leafy suburban communities, including one that I used to live in the 90s. 2 weeks no water, or when there's water it's a trickle. Once again, we had the mayor of Johannesburg accosted at a community meeting where this guy said, just smell me, because apparently there's no water in his neighborhood. I suppose the great thing is you look at the crowds demonstrating, it's a full turnout of South Africa's Rainbow Nation. And everyone seems to be as just hacked off as their neighbor. The Western Cape, well, you mentioned Knysna. Knysna's been in the news for all the wrong reasons. There's a big lagoon there that's contaminated with sewage. So on the one hand, difficulty flushing your toilet. On the other hand, when you do, it all goes out into the lagoon and kills like this precious species of seahorse. I've got vivid memories when I was about 3 years old. One of my earliest memories, in fact, was going to Knysna on holiday. Apparently, it just doesn't have that great pull on the tourists anymore. Funny that. What is there to say? I think the big message is this: it was very sexy to pass the laws, to put in the new infrastructure, to have Kata Asmal appearing with a gogo somewhere in the northwest to and introduce the millionth person to have received water from the new government. But those unsexy maintenance issues were just ignored. And this is where we are. Now, last year, what was the big priority? It was making sure that when the G20 happened, they would have a nice time. As the president said, the situation is not pleasing. Well, when you don't get to shower and you're being told to go to a hotel to do it, or forget about economic growth. You can't have civilization like this.
Right, and I think that is this sort of growing water crisis. And it's interesting because, of course, we don't have quite the same sort of great national water system. I mean, but we do have, you do get like this the Lesotho Highlands Water Project and stuff. But a lot of these water systems are kind of doing their own thing, and they all are.
So each problem has to be fixed by itself. And you know, we're they have much greater consequences, as we pointed out many times. It's been interesting, of course, because the somewhat surprisingly, Adrien Bosson basically sort of kind of endorsed the DA in Knysna recently, which you know, it's not kind of a thing he does that often, particularly because of this crisis. And he pointed out that Knysna seems to be doing worse than George next door. I see George is on the list of areas that's at great risk at the moment. But it is true that the sort of local governance failures seem to have contributed to the worsening situation here. Yeah, this is, I think, unfortunately, going to be the big topic heading into the next local government elections. And it won't be a topic because the political parties decide needs to be talked about. It's going to be a topic because it's what people are very pissed off
No,
about.
no, absolutely. Look, you know, here's the thing, and this goes for electricity, it goes for water, and it goes for the roadway. South Africa's cities were not designed to house the populations they have. Now, I'm not making any kind of eugenics point about this, but the thing is that urban planning, for instance, in the center of Joburg, still represents realities from the 1960s.
There's a
The
sure.
suburbs, you know, your water pipes aren't designed to take that sort of pressure. That's why they burst. So yeah, you know,
Government
you need to rethink this.
had a had a had a had a golden opportunity in the 90s to get ahead of a lot of this stuff by sort of future-proofing our infrastructure and rolling out more in certain places. And you know, in some cases, yes, water infrastructure and these things were rolled out, but by and large, as you say, the sort of like core ideas of how our cities are structured often have, I think, remained very firmly stuck in the past. And you know, the result is we have not coped particularly well with the high rate of urbanization since at least the 90s. Let's move on to a related story, but one that is quite sort of amusing in a somewhat depressing way. And this is in the city of Joburg, which of course has had numerous water crises for a while now, with you know, suburbs being without water for weeks and weeks. Apparently, the so-called bomb squad, which was announced by Mayor Dala Moreira to be this kind of high-level solution of leadership to take on the city of Joburg's major problems, well, it's not doing so well. It seems to have been a bit of a dud. Reporting from News 24 says that Dala Moreira is not getting on well with city manager Floyd Brink. Apparently, they rarely communicate with each other and are not really on the same page. In June last year, Moreira launched the 13-member bomb squad, which was to be led by Snoeki Sigalala, to you know, solve Joburg's problems. But apparently now, anonymous members of said bomb squad are telling the media that Floyd Brink is so against the bomb squad that he thinks that he is limiting them and basically undermining them. He believes they have no impact and doesn't want to work with them. Now, the ANC very deliberately chose to support Floyd Brink as a city manager again and again, even though he has this pretty bad track record of the fact that he's been, you know, involved as an important official in Joburg for a long time, and yet you know, doesn't have a great track record of effectiveness. And yet, even so, even though he's, you know, he's sort of politically on side, he doesn't appear to be getting on with the mayor. When you see dysfunction like this, Terence, is it any wonder that Joburg is in the state that it's in?
No, not really. Look, once again, I'm a canny old dog, and I've been around the block a couple of hundred times. I couldn't help chuckling at the name bomb squad. And just think of what that means. These are people who go into high, you know, pressure environments where their lives are in danger to make sure that something deliberately set to like kill people and blow up property does not do so. I think, yeah, if that's the imagery you're using, I don't know what it says about Yeah, about the city you've been presiding over. Mind you, you know, in downtown Joburg, literally, like sewage pipes blew a big hole in the road. So maybe that's right. But you know, here's the thing. I'm not 100% sure what high profile superannuated ANC leaders actually are going to bring to this. You need technical expertise. You need technical staff to go and deal with it. And you need someone to take action against the corruption, the maladministration, and you know the people clocking out at 2 in the afternoon. That's punishing
people on your side, doing unpopular things that will make life difficult for you in your own political party. That's difficult to do, but no one seems willing to pull that.
Yeah, you know, I think go down to the site of the real bomb explosion and say, look, guys, this is the caca we're in, literally. you know, our roads are blowing up. You know, we've got to find a new way of doing things. But you know, once again, there's this mania for, I think, signaling your intention or your commitment to doing things by making a fundamentally political statement. So Moreira gives us the bomb squad. President Ramaphosa gives us his presidential task team or whatever. You know, the big guns are on this. Maybe they are, but you know, do those people who actually have to sort these problems out, as I hate this expression, on the ground, you know, would it do that with appropriate hand wringing? You know, do they have the resources, the money, the you know, the call out teams and whatever to do this? And then I'll just get back to this. You know, are we actually looking at replacing that infrastructure that was sort of laid under the premiership of Jan Smuts? You know, and maybe, you know, like putting in the Ramaphosa era stuff. You know, a lot of our infrastructure is just beyond its lifespan. I mean, this was, you know, just on the question of water, Anthony Turton was kicked out of the CSIR. I'm sure it was the CSIR for writing a paper where he said it was time to panic. And that's actually a line I remember from reading that paper, because even though he lost his job, it ended up on the internet and said, you know, much of our water infrastructure is now past its useful life. We hadn't built a dam since the 1970s or something. And the really big ones go back a lot further.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know.
Exactly. And while, you know, we've got sort of political infighting between, and I think, you know what, sometimes I think that the political infighting might not be necessarily actually the cause of the problems. The political infighting is a symptom of the problems. When you have a party that is unable to kind of get to grasp with things, or really has any kind of idea of how it's going to sort things, or has a leadership vacuum, people start to turn on each other. And I think that may be what's happening here with the mayor and the of Joburg and the city manager. Their relationship is essentially the key, right? The mayor is like the chairman of the board. The city manager is like the CEO. They're supposed to together make sure that the city is on track. Doesn't look like that's happening.
Well, look, you know, here's an interesting point. I've been on the show many times, and I've said this many times in writing, that one of the seminal failings of post-apartheid South Africa was the failure to create a professional civil service. Now, in saying that, I am cognizant of the fact that there are certain civil servants who have to be, if nothing else, politically acceptable. That's your like very top layer. Those are people like your directors general and your city managers. That's why their contracts are generally kind of limited to a certain period of time. The problem is, I think that we also have a political culture in which the political intrigue is so baked into the way things operate that those relationships are always at risk of becoming unstable. So you know, this isn't so much a case of when one mayor goes, the city manager goes with them, and then you have a new lot coming in, and the guys below them kind of then fall into the new line. This is one where there are many, many forces pulling in different directions, many of whom would probably be quite happy for whatever the stripe of government, as long as they can take their 50%, which should be going to replace those pipes.
Yeah, and therein lies the problem, is that anytime there's sort of procurement, anytime there's an attempt to actually spend money to fix these problems, government has to pay all the caterers and the cronies because of the system it's set up, because of the policies like BEE. And as a result, you know, you don't have the money to replace all these ancient pipes. And therein we get back to the central problem.
Well, you know, look, I was actually told by one gentleman who works in a municipality, and he agreed to speak to me about the question of politicization. He said, look, there are you do have this kind of ideologue who gets in. You see this like with trade unionists, people in the lower rungs. They see the DA or whomever, and that's just the enemy. He says, as you go further up the chain, you find these like career deployees who started kind of in middle management and worked their way up, who are now thoroughly captured by criminal syndicates. On the one hand, they are political deployees, and they like that because it gives them a certain immunity. But their loyalty isn't to any party anymore; it's to
the almighty Rand.
Well, it's to the almighty Rand or dollar or whatever that you can stuff into your couch. And whoever's paying them their monthly bonus and threatening to kill their kids.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found this show interesting. We shall be back tomorrow on the Daily Fringe Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a most excellent and wonderful day.
The Daily Fringe Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.